All right. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of RealCom Live. We have got a great show for you today. Our guest, Mark Ganzi, President and CEO of DigitalBridge. I've met a lot of folks in this industry, a lot of technology people, a lot of real estate people. This guy is something special. He sits right in the middle. He can talk technology, bits and bytes, just as well as he can talk cap rates and cost per square foot. So I am really excited. We're going to have a conversation about what he's doing at his company, as well as some of his thoughts on the industry. So let's get right to it and bring in Mark Ganzi. Mark, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Hey, you know, we do RealCom Live because it's on the fly. Anything can happen, right? It's spontaneous. Would you mind if I shared with you with the audience your pivot this morning? Is that asking?
Well, I have a nonprofit board meeting that starts in about 40 minutes. And I was at my office, which is about 45 minutes from where my board meeting is. So I said, look, I've only got one way to do this, which is I'm going to drive to my board meeting, sit in the parking lot, and I'm going to use my laptop and my 5G air card that sits in my laptop to do this meeting live with you to show the power of digital infrastructure.
Well, okay. So we can unpack this, what just happened for an hour, but I just want to share with you how much I relate to you. I used to run around New York City with a 2400 baud modem and alligator clips, probably before you were born. Okay. And I'd go into the hotel and I would unscrew the phone thing and I would take my alligator clips, clip them on, and I'd fire up my 2400 baud modem so I could send my email. Right. But that was long
ago. We're not that different in age, Jim. I promise you, I did the same thing.
So the key here is, as a real estate guy, having the confidence and the knowledge of technology to understand its power, right? Not reading it in a magazine or hearing it in a PowerPoint presentation, but by virtue of the fact that you use it in your daily life, you live it, you are a digital nomad, so to speak, you can look at real estate differently, right? I mean, because you understand where this is going, right? And so thank you for sharing that. I hope I didn't put you on the spot. And I really do appreciate you taking the time. I know how busy your schedule is. So let's get going. Can you give the audience, people who don't know of you, a little bit of your background, you know, how you got in from technology over to real estate, just a little bit on that journey?
Well, look, for me, it was, you know, it was pretty simple. I went to school in Philadelphia at the Wharton School of Business. I studied under Peter Linneman at the Wharton Real Estate Center. I had great mentors, Mike Fascitelli, Sam Zell, Dick Zimon, Victor Coleman. I mean, just great people that I got to listen to and learn, and ultimately became their friends. And some of them I could call peers today. But what I saw was that, you know, way back in the 1990s, I always joke with people, I became the accidental, you know, tourist in digital real estate. When I came out of Wharton, I went to work for a real estate investment trust in Philadelphia, where I was doing distressed M&A. And as a byproduct of my job, for some odd reason, the antenna leases ended up on my desk, Jim. And they said, Let's just give it to the young guy from Wharton. He'll figure it out. And so I did figure it out. I called a couple of cohorts from business school and who were in the cellular telephone business. And they helped me negotiate a couple of rooftop leases in Philadelphia. And I said to myself, well, wait a second. How many other property owners are getting these requests for rooftop antenna leases or ISP lease agreements where they're bringing cabling into the basement of their minimum point of entry or their MPO? And the light went off in my head and I said, wow, this is going to be huge. There's going to be this massive pressure point between property owners and technology. And if I could just figure out how to sit at that intersection and understand it and understand how to translate telecommunications jargon into real estate verbiage, and then I could take real estate verbiage and translate it back into telecommunications verbiage, I thought there'd be a pretty good career for me at that intersection. And so in 1994, I started my first company. It was really a tower and rooftop management company with Jeff Ginsburg and Alex Gellman, two Wharton grads that were in the cellular telephone business. So they took their technology background in cellular. I took my background in real estate. We coalesced them together and we built our first company. And, you know, now I look back today, we own 22 different digital businesses around the world today at DigitalBridge. And then prior to that, my partners and I had started seven different companies at this collision point of real estate and technology. And it's been an awesome 27-year journey, having the privilege to sort of serve the real estate industry and the telecommunications industry at the same time.
And so what you took, the industry viewed as confusion and disinterest, you said opportunity, and you went heads in and dove into it and decided that you're going to figure it out. Incredible story, absolutely incredible story. So moving along through the 90s, how has the story evolved?
The story evolved is we built a great property management and leasing business. Ultimately, I merged that with another tower company. We took that public under the name SpectraSite. It was a very successful IPO. The business had a very big institutional public board. And I said, look, this is great. I'm happy to see the arc of my first startup get finished. But I really, my passion was for investing in digital real estate and digital telecom. So I turned the business over to a very competent and gray-haired CEO. And I said, I do not want to be a public company CEO. And, you know, I had the privilege of going to work in the private equity world where I was investing in telecommunications infrastructure on behalf of Deutsche Bank, where at that time they had a big private equity practice, a merchant bank called DB Capital Partners. I did that for about 2.5 years, really just investing in telecommunications, tower companies, fiber optic companies, mobile communications companies. We did a big billboard roll up in Brazil. We had a systems integration company and IT services. So really learning that fine art of how to invest other people's capital, how to be a fiduciary. And these were really sort of the building blocks for where I was going to go in the future. And I also had to serve off a 2-year non-compete. So I had a really nice tour of duty for about 2.5 years in New York City, you know, helped make 7 investments at Deutsche Bank. All were very successful. And really then, you know, as you know, we had the dot-com crash, telecoms blew up because they had busted balance sheets. I decided to go back into business for myself. And I decided to try something that nobody else had tried, which was, could you figure out how to build a digital real estate investment trust? Nobody had done it. Mm. And so in 2003, I started Global Tower Partners. It was the first private cell tower REIT of its kind. And so by getting that private letter ruling from the IRS, it really opened a whole new avenue, Jim, of investing in real estate. And as you know today, you know, 5 of the top 10 REITs in the world today are digital REITs. And they're friends of mine. It's, you know, Bill Stein at Digital Realty, Charles Smith at Equinix, or Tom Bartlett at American Tower, or Jay Brown at Crown Castle. Digital real estate's huge. And it all started for me, that journey was recognizing that there was an asset class, which was cell towers at that time. Those were good assets sitting in busted balance sheets. And so I used all of my real estate tools to go into those busted balance sheets, peel those assets out, put them into a real estate vehicle, go out and raise long-term permanent capital, and then finance it like real estate. So in 2004, we did our first commercial mortgage-backed securities of cell towers, of which now American Tower, Crown, and SBA have gone on to do probably 30 of those. We've probably done about 14 of them. And so I figured out how to finance digital real estate like traditional real estate, which was open a dialogue with Moody's, Fitch, S&P, and say, look, this is the same. It's no different than an office building. It's no different than a mall. It's no different than industrial property. We just have different tenants. And oh, by the way, we have different leases. Right. And our leases are 25 years. And our credits are AT&T and Verizon. It was not a particularly hard sell to Moody's, Fitch, or S&P. They got it right away. And the other thing that I figured out is by getting clean title, perfecting your collateral interest in the land where the cell tower was a big mind shift at that point in time in cell towers. So the good news is we got the REIT done. I was the first REIT. We got the first CMBS done. And then all of a sudden it was a copycat league. It was a runaway freight train. American Tower followed, Crown Castle followed, SBA followed. And then literally billions of capital has flown into commercial mortgage-backed securities in digital real estate today. So that was kind of fun because it was a risk. At that time, nobody really, people thought I was a little crazy, but it was kind of fun. It's fun to do things that people say you can't do. I've made my career out of doing things that people said I couldn't do.
And when you think of all the ancillary tenants of a building, the cell tower, the digital sign, the wireless infrastructure, the fixed infrastructure, these are all things that are just, in my opinion, at the beginning of exploration. And all right, we got to take a quick break because I got so many questions I want to ask you. Give us 30 seconds and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Why don't we do this? Let's see. I'm going to bring Howard in to do the news. give you a couple minutes, see if we can work out the technical issues, and then hopefully get you back before the end of the show. So with that, let's bring Howard in to do the weekly news. There you are, Mr. Berger. How are you?
Oh, hey, Jim. Thank you. Hey, and thanks, Mark. What an impressive conversation. So I'm going to take a couple of minutes for the news while Mark's getting his broadband squared away. So every week we highlight a few of the stories from our weekly news briefing. It's released every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific. And for our first article, over the years, I've really had the opportunity and the honor of getting to know a number of very special folks. And this week, we decided to put the spotlight on one of our members of our RealCom community. Her name is Olga Korolyova, and she's the founder and CEO of Capital Brain. She's been training algorithms on structured and unstructured commercial real estate data since 2013. And I met Olga back 2017 when I'd asked her to speak to a group of our commercial real estate CIOs at our annual San Francisco CIO forum on the topic of AI and machine learning. And now you gotta know, Olga's more than a data scientist. She's also an entrepreneur. She runs a real estate development firm focused on sustainable housing. Plus, she's an avid high altitude mountain climber who's been climbing since she's 7 years old. So she summited some of the most challenging mountains on the planet, including Everest back in 2019. And now today is in base camp preparing to ascend the world's toughest and most dangerous mountain in the world, the 28,000 foot summit of K2 at the Pakistan-China border. So prayers going out to Olga and her entire team for an incident-free successful summit. Read the article and you can follow Olga on Instagram. Next, a special shout out to Brian Sutherland at Yardi, this week's technology partner. Now, for those of you who know us, we've been preaching at RealCom since the beginning of the millennial, of this millennium. And our industry is just now waking up to the fact that the systems and processes in buildings have become IP enabled and they can push out a lot of data, which now paves the path to fully automated buildings. So Brian discusses in this article how IoT is literally connecting everything from HVAC to toilet paper dispensers so they can perform smart functions. And the cost of IoT enabled devices is going down. Technology is improving geometrically. And when you combine it with AI powered controls, a building operator can now efficiently balance comfort with energy, optimize asset operations, and utilize space like never before. And now when you overlay AI and machine learning to the data, you can now predict how building systems are going to respond to changing conditions and how to predictively optimize a building's performance. Great article. Thank you to Brian. And then finally, the big cyber story that was last Friday's attack on Kaseya's VSA remote patch management software. And this ransomware attack leveraged a vulnerability in the software against a number of MSPs, managed service providers, and their customers, which could involve 800 to 1500 small to medium sized companies through their MSP. And it's already shut down businesses around the globe. REvil is the ransomware group that ultimately claimed responsibility in the dark web. They demanded 70 million in Bitcoin for the decryption key. And Kaseya is still debating whether or not to pay the ransom. Now, Kaseya has deployed a patch for the on-prem and the cloud clients that's gone out now. And this article, I think, is the most recent update in summary on the Kaseya hack. So it goes deep. Suggest you read it. Jim, I think that's pretty much it for me today. And I just want to remind you all, there's a lot more in our weekly briefings. So check it out, and I'll be with you all again next week.
All right, well, hold, don't go anywhere yet. We're still having a little bit of trouble getting them back in. So what we should do is have a little conversation about the news, some of the stuff that's going on. But even more importantly, I'd like to get your take on the conversation so far. I mean, why isn't, in your opinion, I mean, we've been around this stuff our entire careers. Mark is obviously a prolific investor in the real estate community, making all sorts of waves. Do you feel that what he's done and what he's accomplished is making its way into mainstream commercial real estate? I mean, are you hearing all the people we deal with every day referencing the incredible work that he's been doing?
To some degree, I think there's a sector of our community that's really focused on digital assets, the opportunities to leverage both for their own businesses and especially in multi-tenant situations for their tenants. I still think we're early on in the path. You know, and now with the new technologies like 5G and private LTE and some of the new spectrums and the technology changes that are going to have to take place, there's still a lot of education that has to be done.
But I mean, something he shared, you know, so five of the biggest REITs are digital. I did not know that at all. And so, I mean, you know, we spend our days and nights in this industry, and it's, there he is. Mark, can you hear us?
I could hear you guys the whole time. It was very strange. But anyway, I'm back with you guys.
Well, you're a little pixelated, but we can hear you. So we're going to, Howard, why don't you stay on and with the conversation? Because I know you've got some great insight to add. So Mark, you were talking about Colony Capital and how you met Tom.
Yeah, so look, I met Tom 32 years ago. We forged a really good friendship and partnership. We did some deals together where he invests in a lot of businesses. His investments went really well. And in 2015, he was noticing the transformation and how disruptive digital was to traditional real estate. And he said, why don't we invest together? And so we formed a joint venture in 2017. $4 billion, the largest first-time fund ever in SEC. We deployed that fund in 18 months. It was very successful. Our teams worked well together. And then the board came in and said, why don't Colony together and go all in on digital? And it was bold.
Yeah, Mark, we're having a pretty hard time understanding you. We're having a pretty hard time understanding every other word. So, you know, in order to allow our audience to hear this great insight, I think probably would be best to reschedule. I really want to thank you for taking the time to attempt to do this, but the broadband is just not cooperating, and we can't really hear you that well. So, if it's okay with you, we're going to let you get to your board meeting, but can we ask you to come back when we know we got a secure broadband connection? Because our audience has to hear this story. Would you be okay with that?
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. And good to see you, Howard.
Oh, okay. Thanks,
thank you.
All right, we will be back and have you on the show very, very quickly. Thank you so much.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Take care. Okay. Have a great rest of the day.
So that's one of the realities of live TV, if you call it that. I mean, the guy was willing to, you know, get out of his car on a laptop, do the show. And as we all know it, broadband connections don't always cooperate. And, you know, I got to tell you, Howard, it takes me back to 2004 when we were racing through Seoul, South Korea, five stories underground in a subway station.
And you still had a signal.
Yeah. And we had six bars. Okay. Yeah. So that's 2004. That's now going on, what, 16, 17 years.
And we're still wrestling with that issue here in the States.
Yeah. And you know, we could be all embarrassed and say, oh, you know, we have this great guest and the technology, but I'm going to use this as a talking point to say, when are we going to get it right? Okay. Well, I mean, we are one of the leading technological nations in the world. When you go to, you know, countries like South Korea 17 years ago, and they've got, you know, solid bulletproof broadband, you know, in a train underneath the ground, the question begs, why can't we hold a good broadband signal out more out and about?
Well, our audience didn't hear it, but Mark was actually using a 5G card in his laptop to make a connection. Which I don't know that there are that many folks that are actually doing that for using a 5G card yet. But it made me start thinking, when are we going to get that? When are we going to have that available?
Well, there's two points that this, you know, this brings up for me. Number one is, you know, all out, you know, cannon shot across the bow that the United States has to get very, very serious about its next generation of 5G and past that telecommunications infrastructure, okay? There are countries around the world that started much later than we did that are far more advanced in this next chapter of telecommunications, okay? So that's the 5G consumer stuff, you know, out off the tower. But then we have to talk about the CBRS, the light, all the stuff that's going to be going on, the short range, private networks. You know, how are we going to compete globally unless we're keeping up with the baseline, you know, telecommunications infrastructure?
I may be wrong, but I think a lot of this really comes down to, you know, the expectation on the side of the building owners that somebody other than themselves needs to pay for the infrastructure. We've run across some, there are some folks out there that have been pretty progressively thinking about this, have seen the opportunity early on, and the opportunity for, you know, future revenue streams and how to attract better tenants. We've seen, you know, the JBG Smiths, the Prologises and others and Rudin, to name a few, that have actually proactively gone out there and said, we're gonna put a stake in the sand and we're gonna invest in this infrastructure because we know that it's gonna create value, revenue streams for us and value for our tenants.
Well, you know, and we probably, or at least me, I probably sound like an old record because ever since that first trip to Asia in 2004, every chance I get, people ask me the question, how are we doing globally? I tell them not well, right? I mean, if you look at our technology that we've existed on for the last 30, 40 years, you know, coming out of Silicon Valley, certainly put us at the centerpiece of technology globally. Well, little by little over the last 5, 10, 15 years, that's being chipped away at. And yeah. Now you go to countries like India, I was on one of those little cabs in India, and I land and I'm figuring, you know, of course my cell phone's not going to work. And not only did my cell phone work, but it linked with systems in the United States. And I was making phone calls back home, you know, driving down the street in India on this little, you know, pedicab or whatever you call it, you know, on a telecommunications network that in theory my phone shouldn't have even understood. Right. And that's in a country like India.
It's tougher to pivot. I mean, we were heavily invested in the 2G infrastructure. India wasn't. They could go straight to 4G, 5G.
I get it. I get you know? The competitive situation we're in. So enough complaining. What are the practical things that we need to do as an industry that ensure that our telecommunications infrastructure is setting global standards? Okay, that our buildings are outfitted with all the technology you need, not to just enable good communications, but also connecting that infrastructure, right, to provide for the efficiency and the management effectiveness that we're all looking for. And you mentioned one of them, the real estate industry needs to come together, but what else is it gonna take as a country to make sure that our telecommunications industry, both inside and outside these buildings, is where it needs to be? I mean, you talk to a lot of people. What are the practical things we can do as an industry?
I mean, there has to be a fundamental understanding that the next generation of applications and that people who occupy buildings and people who manage stuff are going to need is going to require a bandwidth, you know. Yeah. Bandwidth that's, you know, in much more copious amounts than we're able to connect with now. More people, you know, more dense networks, higher bandwidth, lower latency requirements. I mean, these are, it's not future stuff. Yeah. This is
going back to what just happened with Mark, a lot of executives in the real estate industry, I've heard this over and over again, say, you better not fail. You can't fail. Building this building, you know, putting up this elevator bank. I mean, obviously there's things that you can't fail at, but overall the philosophy in the tech sector has been fail fast and fail often. The philosophy in the real estate industry is never fail. Mark is a perfect example of a senior level executive willing to take the risk to sit in his car and do a show like this and deal with the fact when things don't work, right? So we need more executives like Mark willing to get up to the plate. And guess what? You don't hit home runs every time, but you're certainly not going to hit a home run from the, you know, the first row of the seats criticizing people. So Mark, hopefully you can hear this. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for being willing to take the risk. We need more leaders like you, and I'll shout from the tallest mountains to say that because.
Yeah, and we need leaders who fundamentally understand that that a strong, robust broadband network infrastructure in building secure is not a is not an option.
No, it's not an option.
It's table stakes.
And this idea
engineered out, value engineered out.
And any of us who've got, you know, the ability to talk to communities, no more. I mean, we always said, let's use carrot, not stick. I don't believe in stick. I just say it's time for us to wake up. In order to maintain our global competitiveness, we got to take this stuff serious. We got to make investments, not just in the infrastructure, but in people and that training and education. It's time to take this serious. And I'm almost grateful that what happened today happened, because here it was, we were talking about telecommunications and digital, and then we have something like that happen, and who knows what it was, but the point is, we got to keep pushing and we got to set very high standards. And all right, Howard, thanks for staying on, thanks for covering. Let's take a brief commercial break, and I'm going to come back and talk about next week's show, and we'll see you in a second. All right. With that, I would like to say thank you, first of all, to our guest, Mark. Despite the problems we had, great conversation. We're going to have him back, and we're going to complete that conversation. And possibly Mark may be the Elon Musk of the real estate industry. He's going to be a guy we're all going to want to watch. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to Howard for doing the news and stepping in. Nancy and team for producing. You guys all did a great job. And next week, we're going to continue this conversation of digital transformation. We've got the topic of creating a smart campus and university. A woman from Kentucky, University of Kentucky, that has just done an extraordinary job turning that campus into a digital city. And you're not going to want to miss it. Another superstar. In fact, I think maybe we should change the name of the show to Superstars, because we're finding them and we're bringing them to you. So with that, you have a great day, great weekend, and we'll see you next week. Be well.